No, I don't think so. I think it's Jane, according to my list. Let me check. It is.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Jane is on the property.
It's John, Rebecca, and Jane.
All right.
So we can start. Jane. Oh, and wait, I recognize this name.
This is so. Oh. Well, I'll wait until she's here.
Okay.
So everybody meet Michelle Tulo, oh, who is the new housing justice manager for the city.
Oh, she cool.
Began her job yesterday. And
hello.
Hey everybody. Nice to meet you.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Tom DiPietro. Have you met Tom already?
No.
Tom
and Kelly? No.
Okay. No.
The present.
John Rosenthal.
Hi.
Fourth Ward Alderperson. Jeff, city attorney. Linda Benoff, minutes taker extraordinaire. Other things.
Rebecca, you recognize that everybody's grid is different.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
It doesn't matter much.
I know.
We've got the names, so right. It works. Nice to meet y'all.
So have you brought housing justice to Hudson yet?
Yeah, day two. Accomplished it. We're good.
Great.
That's good.
Worked yourself out of a job already. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. No, I've got quite an uphill battle, I think. But everyone's been really wonderful so far, and excited to kind of just listen and learn about all the things you've been working on. So.
Well, Rebecca is your perfect guide. Is Julia Black, is that Sarah by any chance?
I don't think that's Sarah.
Oh, okay.
Black.
Okay. Doesn't matter.
Julia Black.
Okay. Whoever that is.
So.
Take it away, Rebecca.
Oh, I was just going to ask Jeff if he had a working draft for us to.
No, Jeff does not have a working draft. Jeff is working on a draft and having to realize I just had to reorganize a lot of what we had and put it in there. And I'm pumping up the whereas and stuff and getting it into the shape to go into the code, which actually I have a good question on that. When you were drafting this originally, you weren't, were you expecting that this would be sort of a standalone chapter or part of the zoning code? Because I'm leaning towards a standalone chapter at this point.
Well, what would be one of the pros and cons of doing either one, standalone versus part of the code?
Well, that's a fair question. I think it's because it is more of mandating a set-aside. It isn't related to the zoning or the land use or anything. It should be a set-aside, separate provision. In fact, I thought of including it as a subset under what is the chapter dealing with fair housing, but I decided it was more as so just going to number it to a sequential one after that and have it as a standalone because it's got its definition section and everything.
Okay.
If we were going to put it into the zoning code, John, I would guess the main benefit, if you will, or factor that would change, I'm not sure it's a benefit, but if somebody needed a variance from this or to change it, it could go to the ZBA.
Right.
In terms of giving, you know, an area variance or something from that.
I mean,
I'm not sure that's a good idea or not.
Right. I mean, we wouldn't be, I mean, we are putting a fee into it. We are putting some mechanism for people to get relief out of it, correct?
We have a general, we have a general appeal of an Article 78.
I mean, technically, the housing trust fund, the fee that's in there, I mean, that was in one draft earlier. Wouldn't that sort of act as a type of relief?
That's the alternative of getting out of it, right? It's instead of providing the housing, you provide funding for the trust fund.
Right. I feel like we keep going back and forth about whether to have that as an option. I actually just was reading a pretty compelling argument for why that doesn't make sense. Or it's not that it doesn't make sense, but that it essentially is less productive of workforce housing, which is what our actual goal is. Like, I'll pass along to you all an article that I just found today that talks
about... What's so compelling about it?
Well, it's because it's slower in developing than opposed to...
That it produces less housing to do that. Because the argument would be, oh, well, then you're supporting, if you're supporting the housing trust fund, it's a housing that supports housing, but essentially, like, what our actual goal here is to produce more workforce affordable housing units.
Well, definitely. But you can also make the argument that we have a two-track goal, a viable housing trust fund, but also workforce housing. It's I guess, and also this is back to the main point that Jeff was bringing up. Whatever the challenge is, how would this be challenged if someone wanted to challenge it, right?
No, that's a different question.
Okay. Because I'm just trying to think if we have a different relief under the law,
One is challenging the law itself, and somebody could bring a challenge if they wanted to.
But like trying to get a mechanism out from, since it's a building requirement, I guess that's
right. It's a building requirement, and so that's why I don't think it does fit under the zoning in terms of giving a variance. You're saying, for every X number of units, provide one unit of workforce housing, and or you have the alternative of providing X amount into the trust fund.
Well, now back to Rebecca's point.
That goes to and I understand that. I mean, I could see that there's. It's certainly possible and conceivable that money put into a trust fund would result in housing being created at a slower rate than if it was required to be created as part of a given unit.
And I'd just like to also talk about, I guess, a third goal is to actually create scattered, affordable housing in the city of Hudson so as to deconcentrate poverty and wealth.
That's an interesting development considering the pilots that are going on, but I'm happy to hear that.
There's going to be hopefully a lot of different opportunities for affordable housing to be created in the city, but with this specifically, because what we're mostly addressing is, market rate developments. That's what this is really about, is to, intervene on market rate.
Those are good policy points. I just want to get back to what Jeff was talking about, because I'm curious about the, since this is a type of building law, and if it's not in the zoning code, we avoid the ZBA, but could it be construed that then that someone would say, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do this. And it's a...
No, we're making it mandatory. I think more of the question is, again, on rolling it out of what happens. And part of it is, obviously, you know the city far better than I do. It's not realistic that adopting this law this year is going to result in a significant change or quick development in new housing. Because by definition, it's only going to apply to new development where you're creating, four or five units. At least five units. And I don't know how many buildings are being built or converted at that rate there for doing it. So there you're saying, all right, we're getting one or two a year. That'll give us maybe one or two units or more if they're bigger buildings as things like a Galvin project, which actually raises another question, which I never even thought of, but let's put that aside. That's a good question. I just thought of something. All right, I'll get to that after this one. But if you're having those five unit plus levels of development and how many it goes through a year, and that'll provide you a couple of units versus You're establishing the housing trust fund with some seed money. You have a developer puts in, you set what your amount's going to be, say $50,000, let's argue, but arguably is the amount that goes into it. That goes into the trust fund. Then your big decision on your trust fund is, as it grows, is how is it going to invest in housing? Where is it going to build it, and what's its mechanism going to be? How's it going to purchase property and convert it, or develop a new housing? And then how's it going to have the money for that, or is it going to be providing it as loans to other developers? So it's that question, I think, is what you may have looked at, Rebecca, which said, you know, that these trust funds are not necessarily a quick response.
Yeah.
I think you've got to look at, it's going to be also very different from the size of the city. How much development is going to happen? Yeah. How many units are going to come in? How are you going to develop them commensurately? I don't know the answer to that, but I would guess in this case, the trust fund is not necessarily a bad thing to have it as an alternative. And I think it might be, there could be some legal issues about not providing the buyout as a means of doing it.
I think
hold that thought for a second. Let me just tell you the other thought I just had in regards to, like, we're talking about the big Calvin projects that have affordable housing elements in them. Mm-hmm. I assume this law won't apply to an affordable housing type project, or projects that's designed already is designed to have workforce or affordable housing in it, right?
That's correct. Although, you know, their initial proposal for the second project was for market rate. And
no, I know that. Yeah.
Yeah, but now it's not. So
right.
Yeah.
So, but and I'm going to have to go back and look at that. I don't know if we had any clear provision of excluding something like that, and how to word that will be an interesting question, but I can...
Would you even have to? Wouldn't it be just sort of an as-stated fact if someone's developing affordable housing to an AMI, then they're...
That assumes we're using...
I think it just needs to say that this applies to market rate housing. Market rate, you know, that this is zoning, inclusionary zoning applying to market rate housing development. I believe that would just take care of it. But
you might be right.
The smart thing would just be to look. I mean, I'm sure this is something that is covered. Covered in any inclusionary zoning that anybody has adopted. Because I'm pretty sure that it never is applying to already subsidized or affordable housing.
I like that better than trying to refer to it necessarily by the AMI, because we're using different AMIs.
Right. I just meant to say that it seems sort of obvious under the law that we're, you know, if someone's developing an affordable housing project, I don't know if we have to specify it in this law that it doesn't apply.
Well, I think we have to.
Okay.
No, you're right. It seems obvious, but I think it's the kind of thing where we should deal with
it. Well, if it could be done artfully, then let's do it.
Yeah.
So, the thing about the housing trust fund, and Michelle has been doing a lot of work on the proposal in advance. I mean, or is very familiar with what we're going to be proposing coming up. There's not going to be. I mean, it is not projected that the housing trust fund is going to be able to itself develop affordable housing. Okay, there's meant to be like eligible uses of it are all housing related, but I guess I don't think it makes sense to try to create an equation of like, you know, how the units that are not going to be created then would balance out with units that would be potentially created by the housing trust fund. I don't think that's like a correlation there. And I really feel like, unless what you're saying is that from what I have read, I do not believe there's any sort of like legal requirement to provide an out.
It depends on how the law is. If it's in the zoning code, you have to, right, Jeff? I mean,
No, I don't think that's it. I would. I'd be concerned about issues of it being a taking and not providing an alternative means of doing it. I don't know if Hudson has it, but it's common in many other towns. I think actually you do have it in your subdivision law, is like a recreation fee in lieu of a set aside for parkland, mm-hmm. or a recreation area.
I mean,
is usually included.
I think we should go back and forth on this and definitely debate the merits of if a fee into a housing trust fund is a proper out in the law. You know, making this mandatory is going to affect development, right?
Can I just add one thing? I mean, something that seems clear from my reading again is that when an out is provided, developers will take it.
Rebecca, developers can manipulate every situation, including negotiating pilots and things like that. We know this.
Oh, but again, some of that is very, they will take it. I agree with you, Rebecca, in a lot of ways. And part of it is then a function of what's the price you pay for the, for getting out of it. And, you know, I don't know what a reasonable number is. It has to have a nexus to the value you're getting and their avoided cost.
We could just not give them the option. That would be.
Well, I'm just not. We might be able, yeah, I mean, it's a question of whether we can do it. It's a policy question. You know, after we last talked, you talked to Bruce, whatever his name was,
mm-hmm.
and he came back and he said that a 20% set aside seems to be the reasonable figure instead of the 25%. So we're one out of five instead of one out of four.
Right. And then I think that maybe it would make, I mean, we have to decide, do we want it to be four and up? Because if we do, then it has to be like 25% for a 4-unit building and then anything above that. Because obviously there's no 20% of a 4-unit building.
Right. That's why I would think it was a question of five or up, or can use, or that doesn't happen and too many could get by with just the four.
Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm asking now is
how it could be 25% for the first at four and then 20% at five. This gives an incentive for people to do larger projects.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another cool thing that I learned in this article today is that one approach is to require that inclusionary units accept Section 8 vouchers, because that is a significant issue that the city faces, mm-hmm. is that we simply don't have landlords who are willing accepting, to work with the Section 8 program, and we have tons of unused Section 8 vouchers out. There's like 130 that the Housing Choice Voucher Program has, and only 50 of them currently are being used. So,
how does the Section 8 eligibility criteria line up with the AMIs we were looking for workforce housing?
I think that,
no, I think I don't know. I don't have an answer for that.
Isn't Section 8 for a lot more severely income stressed than workforce?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so that they
don't. That's what I was thinking. I mean, I don't know for sure, and I, you know, in terms of our workforce may qualify. So I just don't know.
I think,
so
if you have, I think it's more severe income stress, Jeff.
Yeah.
Right.
But another thing that I was thinking about is, I mean, I feel like what we're going to want to end up with is a slightly multi-pronged approach here, where if we're talking about a really small development, like 4 units, 5 units or whatever, then there's a certain kind of requirement. And then for something, let's say, over 9 or over, something like that,
well, I mean, it's my personal take that we should aim for a simple law at first. Like, that was where our goal was, to attack workforce housing initially. And mm-hmm. I think if we sort of stick with a simple framework just to get this going, and then either modify it or, you know, maybe come up with another law if we have to approach it from another angle, I think we're going to move faster on this if we do sort of keep it to our original goal.
I mean, yeah. Okay, I just want to put this out there that it seems to me like it would make sense that if we're talking about, like let's say this proposal for the Lower Warren Street mm-hmm. development, which, Tom, do you remember how many units are proposed for that?
I don't, but it's a lot. It was
like
upwards
60
of,
or
yeah,
something?
60,
well, I don't know
yeah.
if they've even put a plan for it, right?
Yeah.
It's just kind of a drawing.
It's just a drawing.
Not much more than that.
Correct.
Yeah.
It will be a big development.
Be a big
right.
development.
So let's take it as an example. So in a case like that, I think that, like, so if it's above a certain number of units, I think we could start looking for more of a mixed income approach where it's more like, mm-hmm. you know, a certain percentage of, say, Section 8, a certain percentage of workforce above a certain number of units, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do. I just think we should probably think about in concert with the other types of, like, we have the HHA, we have other things that will be providing potentially avenues for that Section 8. So we just sort of have to think about how this law will interact with the other mechanisms to which we're going to be dealing with types of affordability.
Right. And that, you know, if we make it so onerous that an example like the one on Warren Street would just, you know, run away and withdraw. I'm not, you know, this is always a balance. You know that. It's always, you never know how far you can push.
Which then brings back the idea of the fee, because that does then give at least a type of outlet where we get some remunerative return that then we could use to address those really crucial housing needs. And yeah, I mean, I could see, I want to read that article, and I could definitely see it being a detriment on construction. But at the same time, if we really start screwing down on this law here and make something that ends up being on the onerous side, it's also going to have unintended consequences.
I just really, I mean, I think that it's clear that given an out, unless we make the fee.
Well, it's clear by one article that you read.
Let's make the, if we're going to have a fee, it has to be like $1 million per no. I'm joking, but not, because apparently many, according to this article, which is sort of an agglomeration of like a lot of data, it's not just like somebody's opinion, or it's not a think piece, it's like a actual, you know, roundup of facts and experience. There is a history of cities making their fees too low, and there's also a history of developers almost always opting for the fee instead mm-hmm. of the affordable units. And I think in this city, that would be a real misstep in terms of like the actual goal, which is in our strategic housing action plan of scattering affordable housing sites throughout.
Yeah, which I think is ironic with the pilots being.
Whatever. Okay. That's not what we're talking about right now.
No, I think it's very funny. Anyways, but mm-hmm. but you are right. We do need scattered housing. It's something I believe in hugely, instead of concentrating them.
Right.
I don't think we're better with a simple law for now.
Yeah.
Well, simple would be no fee option. That would be the simplest thing.
Or a high fee. I mean, if you put the high margin, I'm fine with that if it's a high fee. I'm just trying to think of, there's got to be a sweet spot here. So if we don't have one in, then
like,
if we don't have one in, then no, hear me out for a second rather than just jumping mm-hmm. in here. If we don't have one in and we're saying it's 20% or 20, you know, we have to come up with some spot that is not going to, that's pretty simple, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Like, if we're not going to have the fee in, then I think we should simplify the law and leave out the Section 8 mechanisms and things like that, and just try to get zero in on a workforce model.
I mean, I'm not sure what, like, I understand that, let's see, what are some of the adages about simplicity? You know, simple is good sometimes, but simple is not always good if there's a complex situation that can be addressed.
Well, I'm just trying to get at your urgency to get the law done, number one, and mine as well. And the more complicated you make it, the harder it's going to be to draft. And then also, if it's something that people can't clearly read when they're engaging it, then that's also a huge problem.
I don't think anything that we're talking about today is so complex that...
Yeah, you're talking about now you're breaking out between 9 and 10. Yeah. Suddenly you're going to create a separate chart that does X, Y, and Z. All I'm saying is I'm advocating for an effective law first, that then we could get on the books, and that's addressing our first goal, which was workforce housing. And then if we see that we really are still having this problem with Section 8, then we engage another mechanism to try to get that moving rather than try to accomplish everything at once.
Mm-hmm. I don't, I mean, Okay, I think the simplest thing would be if we actually had a draft, because we're supposed to have one like months.
Well, I know, but now that's what
I just want to help anything with the draft. I mean, except tell me what to put in it.
So, okay, so we had a draft that John and I had put together, right? And the goal was to have a revision of that draft by, I think, our last meeting. So, like,
we will have it soon.
Well, like, how about next week?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So,
after Monday.
Okay.
Not Monday.
So, and maybe, Jeff, maybe what you can do is with the different ideas that we're tossing around here, some of which have probably more sticking power than others, perhaps you could do a draft that contains like a bunch of complexity, and then a draft that's the most pared down version with just the workforce thing that we've talked about. Although I think we still haven't arrived at the concept or the understanding of what Hudson, like what is an actual workforce wage of Hudson? Like what does that correlate to in terms of the actual price?
I thought you already had an AMI recommendation that we were using.
We do. But then we also were advised by the developer, Bruce, that their workforce is not actually a term that correlates directly to AMI. It correlates more to the actual earning levels in the place that you are.
Meaning it's an application.
I think what you can do for that is, if you're looking for the workforce, is look for your median income that you expect that hospital workers have, not doctors, nurses and staff. Same for teachers, police officers. Take those as your baseline. Find out what those incomes are and correlate that to an AMI figure.
Well, what about also, I just think it's important to recognize that what we're trying to do also is create a real workforce to have people who can afford to live in Hudson who are going to staff all these businesses that are...
That's
somewhat of a different thing. So what you're generally looking for when you talk about workforce is providing homes for the people who provide the municipal services and essential services for your community. It doesn't necessarily require, and could do it if you want to go through it, is a fuller research of, what a retail or restaurant worker is making in this city, and use that as part of your basis. But when we were talking before, is where we're worried about workers for the hospital, and that's relatively easy data to get, and maybe it's more inflated. Maybe it's a higher income band.
I think we were broadly talking about people would be called working class. They're just sort of up from the Section 8. You're in a level where you're making between $20 an hour and X, but yes, including what you're talking about, Jeff, and also including...
Right, so it's a matter of, diving into the AMI and figuring out and find one that lines up with a number that reflects essentially, that band of the of the economy, or the population, in the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think that we...
That's the one you're doing it, and then the Section 8 is a band lower, probably.
Right. So, and maybe, Michelle, maybe you can help with us figure this out. This has been a persistent... hard part of coming to an understanding of what do we mean by workforce in Hudson? Like, what is that? I can also go back to Bruce, who, Crosswinds, the development that he built is workforce housing, but I have heard anecdotally over the years that because they didn't get a pilot, they weren't able to make it as affordable as they were planning to. And so that it still is a difficult place for a lot of people in Hudson who have jobs and are working, cannot qualify, or I forget what it is. It's like there's something that didn't work out. And so I'll ask him if he can kind of...
Right. And I think that goes back to the original thing that we sort of skirted and we moved away from, which is the subsidy side of this, because that's where the developer says, oh, it's too expensive to build X, we could go this far without the pilot, and therefore Without the subsidy, we can't go as far as you want us to go in terms of the income supports.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a couple of questions?
Go for it.
Can someone give me a sense of the scale of the number of like new building permits y'all give out like each year and they expect to give out, and like how many new multifamily developments you see coming on versus, I feel like walking around, I see a lot of like single family and conversion. Mm-hmm.
That's the bulk of it actually.
Yeah.
And the number of,
it's recorded and
it's recorded. It averages around 40 in a, right, a month lately. It's been pretty brisk.
It's really been brisk lately, but you can get that information from Craig Haig pretty easily.
Okay. Yeah, he'll give you the
code enforcement officer.
But Michelle, yeah, it's been mostly the Hudson issue is it is mostly single family conversions, etc. That kind of sort of staying within that zone of that.
But there are a lot
of apartment building or multi-unit construction going on.
Right, but there are a handful, you know, in the preliminary stage where this could still be relevant. Right.
Okay.
Not a lot.
So, some you expect to see.
Yeah.
Okay. I was also wondering what you're counting. Does the ordinance, is it going to apply like per like building, or like let's say someone does like they have like parcels of land or two parcels and they do like a three unit house and trying to get under the four, like to what extent are you looking at things as a project versus like a parcel or an address? And
we were looking at a parcel only because at first, because we were including the fee in the law, we were trying to skirt a developer having scattered developments, then sort of using the fee to ameliorate like 16 different developments, let's say, in a geographic area.
Yeah.
So then we're sort of focused on a parcel, but I guess we didn't look at it to what you're talking about. But I don't know if that's gonna, we are so small, it's hard to think about one developer doing, unless it's Galvin, doing six or seven independent projects and kind of falling under that.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I mean, I guess it's something to consider. I didn't think about it.
I think we've covered it primarily is on the same parcel.
Yeah, that's
all. And that usually is probably sufficient to cover that. I mean, even in a situation where somebody's doing multiple projects throughout the city, each one would trigger it.
Yeah.
Unless they're doing a bunch of them, you know, very small ones underneath the threshold. And they're generally also going to be structured under independent ownership. So it'd be pretty hard to tie them together.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. And so then conversions aren't like a part of this at all. This is for new developments, this ordinance?
I guess it would be if it's a...
No, I think we were covering conversion. If you were taking an existing single family home and converting it into four units or five units, it would trigger it.
Okay.
Or reconfiguring an existing multifamily.
Okay. Would it ever work in the reverse, like a penalty if someone takes a multifamily and turns it into a single family and like takes units off the market?
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Oh, so a penalty meaning like a fee to the housing trust fund, for example?
That would be a trust fund fee.
That's a great idea, actually.
I don't know if it's a great, if it's a good idea, we should consider it.
Just trying to
Do you know of any place that's done that?
Yeah. I can't think of off my head, but I can definitely look into it. It's definitely, I know it is a thing that people have done before.
I'd like to see that where someone's done it. I've seen it somewhere where they've limited single family to multifamily conversions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that raises other issues, but converting back to a lesser, denser one, I can think of a host of legal issues with that.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to see how that's been, where that's been done.
Right. Yeah, I'll look that up.
I mean, from a somewhat of a policy perspective, it certainly does make sense in a lot of ways, but.
Yeah, those are some questions I had for the moment, so thank you.
Great.
I think scale's definitely a lot of the studies that people have done on this stuff is like in such bigger cities.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to think about when these are done at the scale of huts and what they look like.
Well, that's the real problem here, because they're so small that we don't want to stifle, you know, we could go too far in one direction, stifle development in a very tiny community, because some of the costs could be are going to be hard to bear for a developer. So it's an interesting problem.
I had a conversation with the planning and zoning person from Newburgh, who basically said, and this was pre-COVID, and she said, we do not, you in Hudson do not need to incentivize market rate development in this market.
Okay, that's one voice, but we'll continue.
No, she's good.
She's to incentivize market rate development. Yes, no, that's right. Not the problem.
That's not the problem at all. That's what we're talking about. We would decentivize development if you made two owners of a law. That's my point.
Right.
Okay. Well, I feel like it's sort of the same point.
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm. No, if you essentially make development too expensive by requiring too much of an extraction for this benefit, people will say, no, it's just not worth it. I can't make this fly.
We'll go elsewhere. We're small enough and someone would say,
yeah, we'll do it later. It's you know, everyone's profit driven. Mm-hmm. And if they can't make a profit from it and it gets too expensive or too onerous somehow, then they go someplace else. John's right. The trick is finding the sweet spot in there. And it's generally smarter to err on the lower side than the higher side so that you're not, you know, causing too much harm in the meantime. Especially if you're going to have in lieu of fee, you can always add that, you can always increase that in lieu fee. Easier than changing the rest of the law.
Good point.
Going forward, if you think, oh, people are taking too advantage of it, we're not funding the trust fund enough or something, I would think that'd be a relatively easy tweak to fit, you know, something to fix.
I mean, again, like, I think that the common understanding of that is that I've already said this like 5 times. So, you know,
that people take advantage of it too much, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or not, it's, yeah, just we'll opt for that, you know, and that's not what our intention is with this, so.
Well, I understand your point that it's not necessarily consistent with the housing plan and doesn't necessarily promote scattered affordable housing development through the city. However, depending on how you use the trust fund in terms of providing financing for affordable housing for people to get houses or build their own, you can do that through the use of where you locate it through the city. Mm. Is that, you know, you affirmatively use the trust fund to seed it throughout the neighborhoods. I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Okay.
Jeff, last meeting you said you were going to investigate whether this law could carry a condition that a developer could not combine incentives.
Did I have that? I don't remember that on my list. Well, we certainly could put that in. I'm not sure it's a wise move in terms of, you know, when you're going to say they're putting together a package together, they're not going to be able to find other tax abatements or something else. I don't know if, why would you want to preclude that if someone's got to put together a package of financing?
Honestly, that just was something left over from last meeting that was on the list. So I don't remember exactly what the conversation was.
I don't remember a discussion on that, and I didn't have that in my notes. But I don't, so you don't want somebody who has to do, you know, a set aside here also getting a pilot?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to be trying to pass a resolution that says that we're not giving out pilots for market rate development. So, you know, aren't we, John? Isn't that still?
Really, yes. But now we're, you know, so
we should. So let me just look through.
If Tom would.
No, I understand that view, and I'm not disagreeing with it.
What, Tom, so you did in favor of market rate pilots?
Who, me?
We're not gonna do that. Yeah, we're not going to do that resolution.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay, because we should. Go ahead, Jeff.
You could have a partial pilot to cover the affordable element.
For?
Well,
I guess this comes back to the abatement question that we can't seem to figure out.
I'm not sure we can, you know, make that a law, if that's what you're suggesting. I mean, IDA has the authority, so...
Right.
Well, we could, the council could pass a pod, could put a pilot provision, can we? Yeah, I mean.
Well, what do you mean? Tell the IDA what they can and can't do? I don't think so.
No, I mean, we could, in general, if in this law, like to Jeff's
point. Oh, okay. Yeah. Right.
No, you could. I don't think there's necessarily a legal bar from you putting something like that in this law.
Okay, cool.
But I guess that's what I was getting at about abatements, though, Jeff, right? You know, because then if we're suddenly saying you could apply for a pilot to the Common Council in the law, I don't know if I want to do that.
All right.
Unless the pilot is that mechanism, you know what I mean? I'd rather have other language for that, but maybe there isn't. I think it's like because it will become a political minefield for,
I guess,
for councils going forward.
Well, that's the separate question of getting it through. But we could put something in here that says, because again, this is for market rate housing, it's separate from the affordables. Anyone coming in this that is not otherwise an affordable housing project cannot apply for pilots for it, I guess, a tax abatement. I wouldn't exclude their ability, because who knows what's out there, what would be developed, the ability to find other financing assistance,
right,
financial assistance, yeah, no, not that. But limited to the question of a pilot, a tax abatement might be okay.
I mean, initially, that was my goal, is to allow to have these sort of fractionalized tax abatements in these types of buildings. So, you know, a small scale developer could subsidize the cost of that, of this construction, which seems to be the thing we're running into. But, you know, but a pilot seems to be a specific type of mechanism. I was trying to look for something else that wasn't, you know, this a scheduled tax, that type of tax rule.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff, do you feel like you have enough to go on at this point?
Yeah, I think I got a lot to go on.
Great.
I would like to see that article.
Yep.
You were saying about that.
Right now.
And I'd like to see what you heart on your shirt, John.
Yes.
Okay.
Comes with my $5 a month sustaining donation.
I'm putting it in the chat.
Thank you.
Okay.
How do we access that?
You just click on it, open in a browser.
It will? Okay.
You just click, yeah, it will open up in whatever browser you have open, Joe.
If you click the three little
red. Oh, yeah, look at that.
Three little dots.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So is that it for tonight? That's productive.
Wait, so Jeff, you said by Friday, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So should we try to have a meeting subsequent week?
Let me check the schedule, because, you know, there are other meetings, but yeah, we can do that.
Please, so that would be
a
lot.
Not be on a Wednesday at 6, though? Like, I could do Wednesday at 5, whatever.
Okay,
we have, like,
we'll
a weekly.
We'll figure it out.
Well, not that next Wednesday. That'll be the regular meeting.
You're talking?
Oh, no, Tuesday. That's Tuesday, so.
I assume you're talking about all the housing authority meetings.
Right. We have our housing.
Yeah, no, I'm aware. Wednesdays. I'm aware of those.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send around a couple dates and times.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
You got it. Oh, Shelter Force, the original voice of community development. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that gives us progress of some sort. And thank you, Michelle, for coming. Any questions from Julia Black or Carol? Since they're our audience tonight. Okay. Thank you. Good work.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you all.
Nice to meet you all. Have a good night.
Nice to meet you, Michelle.
Nice to meet you, Michelle.
Likewise.